Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 11, Episode 8, the Season 11A finale. I don't know what it's called, but the title of it is Hwacha, Hwacha. That's not true. That's not true. I wish the title was Hwacha.
I thought it was for blood or something.
It is. It's for blood. But come on, that's such a better... They still have time. They can call Episode 9 when they come back. They can call it Hwacha. We're right in the middle of Hwacha. I just love the word Hwacha.
I love the word Hwacha too. I had a little Hwacha Renaissance. Looked up some information about it. I got a pretty solid theory about why we saw it. It'd be hilarious too, because if they had named this episode Hwacha, you know people would be like, what could it mean? Well, Hwacha is a Korean word for this, fireworks, arrow, artillery battery. So maybe it means it. And it's like, no, it just literally has Hwacha.
Yeah.
Doug went back in 500 years in Asian history and discovered the ultimate field artillery piece against zombies.
Oh, yeah. They found some leftover Georgie materials at Meridian. For sure.
Yep. Hwacha equals intellect. It's I think this is scribbled on one of the faded copies of the key to whatever. Anyway, yeah. Hwacha.
Yeah, it's called For Blood, which I don't know. It's a family thing, right? Dom Toretto would be super happy about this title.
Yeah.
All right.
Or maybe the thing is that this episode's For Blood. Maybe next will be Hwacha, First Blood, or First Blood Part. No, it's For Blood. For right. Blood. Next one will be Hwacha, For Blood Part 2.
Love it.
I got the Fast and Furious jokes in here too. That this is essentially this is a Dom Toretto movie with directed by George Romero. It's pretty nice.
Well, what'd you think of it?
I actually thought most of it worked really well. There's a couple of silly things in it. I don't know where you fall on landmine zombies and Hwachas and all that stuff, but
I like that stuff. That's fun.
I watched this movie or watched this episode twice. And at first I was like being real critical about the Daryl Leah dialogue, but I feel like if I really put my mind into Daryl Dixon, like, I think he played his cards about as well as he could have. Like, he got to a point where he can no longer keep the subterfuge and it's essentially kill the woman you love or just fucking radically level with her.
Yeah.
And he did. And then I thought that, well, clearly they're going to match. And she's going to run off. But I actually liked how the episode ended, where they both were true to their families in surprising and infuriating ways to each other. I think there's some quibbles here and there. I also felt like the stuff in Alexandria was a pretty good, speaking of Romero, like homage to Night of the Living Dead, all these zombie arms coming through farmhouse windows, barely boarded up and slatted. Like, some of that stuff was kind of evocative.
I guess
I was kind of expecting something more definitive. I was hoping for something more definitive with the Reapers.
It's pretty definitive. I think so. Well, it's tough to say, right? Because they beheaded the beast. But like I said last episode, I think you can't just behead this beast, as Negan said. You got to take them all out, right? Because Leah's stepping into that role just immediately.
She's not going to let him out of the food, clearly. Yeah.
No, of course not, because she has family. Yeah, so it's not like totally dealt with, but the psycho, like religious part of it, I think, is dealt with, because I don't think Leah quite buys into that stuff.
Yeah, I wonder how many of the people do, though. That's the, I guess, the question that I have. But I agree, like, this is, I don't think this plot lasts much more than the premiere of next season, I wouldn't think. There's going to be a decisive battle. I guess the only question is, or the only criticism is, this feels a little, I don't know. It's a weird cliffhanger, because I feel like it's justified if someone fairly important dies. But like, I can't imagine who that would be. Like, I don't think they would kill off Maggie. Casey Jones would be kind of shocking, but like, I haven't even learned his real name.
Right.
Negan, I don't think is going to happen. Gabriel? Mm-hmm. Father Gabriel's kind of living on borrowed time, because Maggie bailed his ass out of certain death last season. So,
yeah.
You got any math on that, or thoughts on the episode?
No, I think the most likely one they'll kill is Casey Jones. They wounded him pretty badly in this episode. They got him in the leg real good.
Yeah, a light landmining.
Right. So I don't know. Maybe that's where they're going. But yeah, Gabriel seems to be of like the survivors that I give a shit about, because Casey Jones does not fall in that group. Gabriel's probably the most up on the chopping block of those three. Or four, I guess. Daryl's also there.
And maybe Maggie, though. Maybe Lauren Cohen doesn't really want to come back for two more mini seasons, and she's got other things she wants to do. And that would definitely pack a wallop, because even though I found Maggie much, you know, kind of frustrating, I still, you know, still got respect and much love for someone who's been with the show since the second season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. It might make sense. She's the one pushing for this clear suicide mission. So maybe her paying a price for that would be good.
It would be karmatically satisfying if she is the one of the ones that pays the ultimate price for this kind of like suicide mission to save the community and to save little Herschel Jr. and all that stuff.
Aside from Boston Rob being, you know, the one who's going to pay the ultimate price, apparently, because there are two things in this episode that they completely ignore that surprised me. The Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Being a huge one, like this Boston Rob,
swerved way out of there. Yeah.
But the Commonwealth gone this episode. Nothing.
Yeah,
that's disappointing. That's the way that they did last episode, where they just sort of yanked away all the things you thought were going to happen. Just out of the blue, seemingly, and then not to come back to it this episode feels pretty disappointing.
I think it's disappointing because I think that was the Commonwealth, cliffhanger. And it would have, I mean, man, this episode had been that much cooler if they could have interleaved all three of the stories, like coming to a head, you know, like Yumiko's brother and Eugene and everybody being arrested, and the shit going down in Alexandria, you know, things getting desperate, and the Hoacha setting off. That would have been like a three axis banger of a cliffhanger, but unfortunately they couldn't stuff all that into one episode, so
yeah,
we got a divided a little bit of a divided finale.
Yeah, but I guess that's fine. We'll come back next mid-season, I don't know, the mid-season chunk, and we'll see what happens with Hoacha in the Commonwealth.
Yeah,
overall, not too bad. I had some problems with the, you know, I get what they're doing with the Alexandria stuff, with the homage to the classic zombie stuff, but also a lot of questions about that one. A lot of questions about that part of the thing.
There was some really shaky, you know, home architecture.
That and just like logic to what's happening outside, like what could possibly, because they never go outside, right? That's the thing, like they've got groups outside, but we never see them,
right? We didn't see any of the other like desperate like wall action or that. I think the episode could have really sorely used some cuts to Aaron, you know, trying to shore up the wall, and cuts to whoever was sent to try to put out the fire at the at the windmill.
They seem to want to stick with these two very small groups. And I get it. Like there's some interest to that. I think.
I really liked the Judith stuff. Like, I was all on, like, all on board that, you know, Judith getting, like, her character praised by many adult people that the show respects. And I thought she continues to hand
the show my really respect. But I don't know if I do. Like, there's a scene, we'll talk about it. Maybe we should just get into the recap.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should.
All right, let's take a quick break first.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off with a herd moving around in a weird way outside of Meridian, and they take note of it. Carver suggests they take him out. Daryl suggests they lead him away. Pope says, we'll go with Daryl's option here, but he doesn't send Daryl to do it. He sends Wells to do it. And this guy, Wells, leads them away from the fence, but he gets surrounded in the woods, and then our group wounds him just enough for the walkers to get him. They do the whisperer thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen it. You know it. You love it. The whispers
at the graveyard. Hey, zombies. We know how to take out zombies. Holy shit. A zombie just dodged me and stabbed me in the guts. Jesus knows. Effective. Jesus knows how that works.
I'm looking around here at the walls of Meridian. This is our first like really good look at the walls of Meridian. Uh-huh. I guess we had the, you know, binocular look last episode, but this is the one where I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, these walls are not cold rolled steel. These are shitwood walls with like corrugated aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't look amazing.
Reaper after Reaper going to bust through the shitwood and, or maybe zombie after zombie. I did like Daryl, you know, we're talking about Feral Daryl's like negation. He's like, yeah, yeah. But he's like, nervous Feral Daryl's affirmative. Like, have you ever seen any weird walker shit like this? Oh, yeah. South of here. Happens down in Florida. Shit, you ever heard of Florida's up? Fuck, you know, I used to have to get him in a trash can, trap him that way. Like, his high speed, like, pedaling backwards, trying to... I thought there's some good stuff where he was being a pretty skillful double agent. His flop sweat here on the wall, I don't think was his best showing, but he gets better as the night goes on.
Yeah, I like it. It's, you know, it's doing enough for the audience, and I think just enough for Pope, and it's walking a fine line, and sometimes it crosses to one side or the other a little bit, but it always comes back to the line.
I gotta say, when Wells was leading these guys off, The Walking Dead never gets lazy about their zombies, man. Their zombies are always on point, and the acting, mm-hmm. the zombie acting is so fucking good at this point. Like, I just, like, and sometimes I'll catch a zombie. There was one that was coming from the, you know, blind side of Wells here. Mm-hmm. That she was wearing, like, this, I don't know, like, really form-fitting, long-sleeve, like, psychedelic dress, and I'm like, I always wonder, like, what was this zombie doing? Mm-hmm. This has got to be an OG zombie, like from like you just walking around in this kind of get up. There's no, but then again, you've also got Princess. Like if you saw a zombie wearing a pink teddy bear with like rave, you'd think, oh, that's a raver from the night of. But she's just keeping the spirit of civilization alive. I just think it's endlessly fascinating, and I will give it up to The Walking Dead. 11 and a third seasons into this thing, they do not take a day off of the latex. Like, sure. Every fucking day they come to play on that.
Yeah. Oh, their zombie stuff is awesome. Speaking of awesome zombie stuff, the way that they kill Wells is pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. Like, I'm a fan of just standard ass zombies get you and they rip you apart. I love that stuff, man. I don't need, like, you know, zombies pushing your body to, you know, into a wall with spikes on it or something. I don't need anything too creative. Just have a zombie grab them and rip them into pieces. I love it.
Yeah, undead human piranha. That's where what you want. And I also fucking love the design of Negan's mask. It accentuates his, like, playful asshole. Like, it's the way the mask is, like, I don't know, puckered and like its expression it's wearing. It just looks fucking hilarious on him. Hmm. I love it. So the stringy ass hair and everything. It's great. It's great. It's like Negan cosplaying as someone from Slipknot. I love it.
So then we go back to Alexandria. There's a massive storm. Everyone is huddled up inside. Apparently their doors are made of shit wood too, because they are falling apart. They're coming off the hinges.
They got rotten doors, man.
How did that happen? Aaron needs to take better care of his house. This is Aaron's house, right?
Those fucking whispers. They came with zombies. Oh. They came with torches. They came with termites. Apparently.
Yeah.
Devious fuckers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They mess with everything. The doors are falling apart. Judith is comforting the other children, and then they see pieces of the wall blowing around outside, which is bad. That's bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw. So, and like, you know, branches are breaking through the window and all that kind of stuff. I saw we got some advanced feedback from people who saw this on AMC Plus. Didn't read it last week, obviously, because I've been a spoiler. But there's a couple people, and I saw this on the main subreddit also discussing it too. Kind of disappointed that they're going with a storm of the century, you know, cliffhanger once again. Recall there was the time where out in the middle of the War of Alexandria and the Whispers, like, they, you know, weren't allowed to cross the line, but there was a blizzard and people were going to freeze to death unless they crossed the line, etc. What do you think about Alexandria suffering two storms of the century within a 3-season span?
Well, that was a cold storm. This is a warm storm. So they're very different, storms.
Sure.
No, I was trying. When I first saw the storm, I was thinking, okay, when does The Walking Dead take place? How many years have they been out here? Does this line up with, like, a Hurricane Sandy, or, you know, one of the various other storms that has hit the East Coast, the big ones, with names that you would remember?
The once in a lifetime storms that happen every 10 years now.
right. But I ended up not bothering to actually do the math, because I'm sure they haven't. So that's the thing, though. Like, I can remember a lot of storms on the East Coast, Sandy in particular being one of the big ones that blew through there and just fucked everything up. And that was over in New York, and we are very, very close to that. We are right on the coast.
Yeah, that's the thing. We just happened to look it up last week because we were kind of wondering some geography stuff, and Alexandria happens to be less than 10 miles from the bay. which is connected to the ocean. So, like, you know, getting and this thing is like you talk about the cold storm versus a warm storm, but you know, you got the nor'easters, like, the can dump just like feet of snow on you and can get blizzard conditions. Happens, right? You know, like, it's happened a couple times in my lifetime. I just feel like that it'd be one thing if they were still in Georgia, although you got tornado, like, right. This shit does happen. Like, natural disasters would be part of the apocalypse, and it's double because, like, if your walls fall down, you got the fucking zombies, and if your windows blow in, you got the fucking zombies. So I guess I didn't find it a problem, and it also didn't feel like it didn't feel like the same type of crisis, you know.
Sure.
People weren't freezing to death. People were in danger of, like, debris and zombies and stuff. And also, like, if you want to say they're very similar, I think it's a nice yardstick for growth for Judith, because Judith was kind of part of the problem in that cold storm, because she was wandering off and almost freezing to death, where here she's very much part of the solution. You know, she's like the boss of the children. She's their commander. And I like that. I like that.
Where do you think the shitty teens are during this happening?
Shitting their pants, like, you know, just like crying to their mommies, wishing they had an ounce of the dignity and self-assuredness that our dear Judith displays.
So the show seems to be telling a story where they've taken all of the main characters, the big badasses, and they've put them into Aaron's house. And then I guess shitty teens and no names are off in other houses right now. Are they having the same problems? Yeah.
Have you seen the gif of the guy? There's a guy holding an enormous American flag in like a hurricane force wind, and he's like bracing himself, and he's got long hair, and he's like he's only wearing like a swimsuit, and he's got bare feet and bare chest, and he's just thrash metal turning his head into the storm. Have you not seen the no. So, you know, my headcanon says that the shitty teens are out there doing that.
Yeah.
And then a piece of corrugated cold rolled steel comes and just bisects them like an enormous buzzsaw, and we'll never see him again. That's what I think happens.
I want that scene.
I think Kang Corner, she mentioned that. She said that the shitty teens, they've got just ripped in half by
they've been torso
by blowing. Yeah, they respected the hurricane as much as they did the undead, and it bit them.
The other thing about the storm that was fun is that I don't know if you got this, but last night there was also a massive storm, and I was watching this at like midnight, 1 a.m., whatever. Massive storm outside, perfect ambiance for the storm that we were experiencing on screen too. So that
I was
watching
cool. Midnight Mass, but I was enjoying the stormy, the extra spooky conditions. Yeah, sure.
Then Pope knows that Wells is dead and that it wasn't Walker's. He's got some intuition for this, let's just say. He knows it was Maggie. And he just calls her my enemy all the time. He doesn't know her name, but I'm going to call her Maggie. Leah's pissed that he sent Wells to his death knowingly, and Pope promises this time that the enemy will not escape.
Boy, it's a lot of this is it's kind of in stage alpha where, you've promised death and destruction and you know, unleashing whatever quite a few times now. Maybe you should get to doing that unleashing.
And you're quite obviously like losing control over this group somewhat. Like Leah's rebelling. You're getting more flustered, more angry. You're having to like exert control in physical ways more often. Yeah, you can see the downward spiral here.
I kept on thinking about Tywin Lannister and his like any king that must say I am king is no king at all. And like Pope is just violating Tywin's law left, right and center. He's constantly, who do you think is the leader here? Who's the one that delivered us? Who's the one that's God's chosen? Who are you questioning my decisions? Like, it's like constantly as increasingly people are questioning his decisions. So, this guy wasn't long for the world, and he doesn't make it out of this episode.
And I think Daryl's been doing a pretty effective job with his stupid Daryl act. He's playing pretty dumb pretty well.
He's always suggesting
kind of, you know, things that could be plausible if you're not thinking about it much, but
sure.
Also things that are just very bad ideas and things that are clearly wrong.
Yeah. I think this episode was a little bit better. He was a little bit more cagey other than the flop sweat asking if he's ever seen anything like this before. Because I still don't think there's a very good liar.
No, not particularly.
He does best when he can twist the truth a little bit, or like, you know, work with like a half truth or a white lie and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a lot of practice to be a good liar, and I don't think Daryl has a lot of that practice. So while we're on the Pope stuff, though, in the previous scene, conspicuously, they stole Wells' radio.
Right.
And there was like an inset shot to make sure you saw Maggie pick that thing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it never came into play the rest of this episode. I kind of wonder how that will end up, because I'm sure it's going to end up turning some kind of tide in the next episode. Like, maybe it's going to give them advance warning for like what the whole, you know, so like we're all thinking they're just going to be standing front and center getting watched, and they've been able to take cover. I wonder, but like I just wanted to make sure that everyone saw that they got a radio coded through the team's, you know, whatever encoding. So they got inside knowledge now from here on out.
Yeah, it's so weird. I thought that was going to come back in the car scene or the truck scene.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't when it could have. It was weird. That truck scene is strange.
There's so many times in this episode, I'm like, oh, this is clever. This actually answers the question. Oh, no, no, it doesn't. Nope, Dave, no. Okay. Yeah, like there's a couple points where I thought like they had clear cut answers for how they're going to get the food out and do all that stuff. And then they just did something completely batshit with it. I'm like, okay, we're back to like not really understanding the plan.
Yeah. So we go back to Alexandria. There's a hole in the wall, apparently, and there's a fire in the windmill that's attracting walkers. Aaron takes a team to put out the fire. Carol takes a team to repair the wall. And Rosita keeps a team inside to protect the rest of them. Virgil, I think, here is the only one who stays inside with Rosita, that we know, anyway. And then Judith wants to go with Carol, but she talks her into staying to keep the other kids calm. And she starts by calming Gracie. And then the others head out into the storm.
Yeah, Judith springing into action, being the kid comforter.
It's good. I like the three-prong attack here.
Yeah. Like, my only complaint is I think it would have been a much more exciting episode, clearly a much more expensive episode, had they been cutting to the fire team, the wall team, the house team. Like, all those would have reinforced each other. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. Maybe that's what maybe For Blood Part Two is like. Oh, we're really onto something. Maybe that's exactly what they come back and they just have all that actions set up. But
well, this is the death blow for Alexandria, right? I mean, the wind is ripping their shit walls apart. Yeah, the windmill is done. It's on fire. It can't be used anymore. So
there's a lot of spectacle, and they clearly like that windmill was on fire. Like, I think they're burning the set down and tearing shit down. Like, yeah, okay, I think Alexandria, you're 100% right. It's just going to be gone.
Yeah, they were already in trouble, and this did nothing to help that. It made it 10 times worse. So yeah, they will almost certainly be moving on from Alexandria next season, especially because in the previously on, they showed Aaron saying, you know, Alexandria is our home. I'm not ready to give it up yet, or whatever he says.
Yeah.
Now he'll be ready to give it up, right?
Probably, especially since I imagine the Commonwealth. That might, like I said, that was my original prediction. I still haven't come off it. I think the Commonwealth is going to come in and save all days. Like, it's going to put the it's going to put the death knell to the Reapers. They're going to storm in and like secure Alexandria, but just enough to like gather everybody to get the fuck out of there. Like, I think that's the key, and getting rid of Alexandria. I fully expect next year's credit sequence to have the stained glass window with Alexandria just shattered too. So like maybe the tree will be cut fucking down.
The windmill will be all burned up. Yeah.
Like the whole thing is just going to be donezo.
Mm-hmm. Probably. All right, the walkers are gone. We're back at over at Meridian.
Before we move on, what did you make of Connie wanting to volunteer with Carol? Is that like a political play? Kind of like ostentatiously showing that I forgive Carol. I'm the one that was most in danger from her crazy ass cave-in plan, and I'm wanting to support and protect her.
I read it as more personal forgiveness. Like she's telling Carol, I forgive you by, you know, putting her life in her hands, essentially, again.
I guess a lot of the personal is political and vice versa.
Be,
when you
yeah.
got a town this small and you're talking about a council member and, you yeah, know.
For sure.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So back in Meridian, the walkers have left the fence, but Pope knows that Maggie hasn't left. And he asks Daryl what he can tell him about Maggie. He says not much. And then Pope tells a story about a stray dog that he had to kill because it bit him. And he tells Daryl not to be the dog. And Daryl suggests they look for Maggie in the trees, which is pretty hilarious, but not
hilarious. It is.
Again, it's not entirely stupid, right? I think like
it kind of is Robin Hood men in tight style. Oh, yeah, she's going to be up in the trees, man.
The thing about being in the trees is you lose your mobility, right? You might gain the high ground. You might get a couple shots, but boy, you cannot get out of harm's way if they come at you.
No, she's got like Ewok Village set up there where they can sure. go from platform to platform, vine to vine. This was patently ridiculous. And I feel like it. That's the thing. Like, I feel like the show knows it's ridiculous because the way, you know, Pope said, we'll see. He could have just as easily with the same face said, sure, buddy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like that's not agreeing with it. But
yeah,
but I thought the scene with him and the dog thing, that was pretty good. Like, you know,
yeah.
and he's looking at me with just that look and they pan over the Daryl looking like a dog that doesn't know whether to lick or bite the guy. Now, I don't think those are exactly the emotions he's feeling. It's more of like, should mm-hmm. I just like, you know, I got to kill this guy. Where's the right angle? But yeah. it's good. And like Daryl being able to handle it's like, hey, don't worry. I sure ain't going to lick you. I thought it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I did, too. And at the end of the scene, they announced that the walkers have returned.
Mm.
And then they all are checking out the walkers on the wall. And Pope's impressed at Maggie's walker weapon, let's call it, weaponizing the walkers. But it's not as impressive yeah. as the minefield that the Meridian people have, the Reapers, that starts blowing up walkers as they advance. That was pretty sweet.
It's kind of grimly hilarious, like mm-hmm. seeing those full chunky salsa, full body zombie explosions was good. And then like also there's a couple times where they put us inside the human group of the Whisperers where yeah. they're just like putting their heads down. And it felt like watching like something from the Pacific War where like Marines are storming some godforsaken hill. And there's like, you know, people are getting exploded, but like you just got to keep going forward and like don't break ranks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it says a lot about like Negan that he's able to do that, even though he doesn't fully believe in this plan, mm-hmm. That he's still willing to fight for these Alexandrians, I guess. I mean, you can't say he's not a team player or a coward after this shit. Jesus.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
grim.
No, he's gone along with, you know, what was a truly insane non-plan before this. And now he's, you know, coming up with a pretty good strategy and plan to help them out when they desperately need it. Because I don't know that Maggie running in and getting a truck and Gabriel getting a sniper rifle alone would have worked. Probably need some kind of distraction. So then we go back to Alexandria. Rosita uses Aaron's furniture to board up the windows and says he'll understand. The kids want to be like Judith, who is never afraid. And she talks to them about how to use her fear, how she uses her fear and turns it into an advantage to make her stronger. And then Judith and Virgil talk about Michonne and how much she's just like her mother. Gracie stands next to the window and gets grabbed by a walker. Judith saves her. And the walkers are everywhere. They're all outside trying to get in. Here's what I don't understand about this.
Yeah.
Well, okay, two things in this scene that I don't particularly like. One, didn't they just state that there was a gigantic fire out in the windmill that was attracting all the walkers?
Yes.
Why are the walkers suddenly attracted to Gracie's shoulder inside of a house?
Look, if you don't want zombies trying to get in your house, you shouldn't let your delicious children parade in front of the windows. You know, just
this
like
is
just
true.
Like flailing and you know, look how sloppy she's handing her sword. Those zombies are just like, that's easy pickings, man.
True.
Like, they're wolves. She's the sick buffalo. You know, baby, and the herd hasn't properly encircled her. She's just going to get snatched. Thank God for Judith.
I just don't see why the Walkers were at this house in the first place. I guess all the banging and nailing and hammering furniture to the
walls. That
probably
it's
did
like
it.
Also, I know I bagged on this with Daryl's Wild Man Camp, but is there something in like Hollywood construction laws that you cannot observe right angles? You cannot like have boards straight. You just have to just slop them together in any kind of random fucking pattern.
It's a union thing.
Because I feel like, you can't, because like, I just like, good Christ, just evenly, like, a little bit of forethought, a little bit of proper planning, count number pieces, how many slats can you afford per window? It's just, and then seeing them like nailing drawers to two boards in the middle of the window, like, what the fuck is this going to do? You know, like, you got to get this shit nailed in that shit wood in the wall. I don't know. Right. I don't know.
I'll give you a tip.
Walking Dead, please go to Home Depot a few weekends and take a couple construction classes. Like, please, I'm just begging you. I'm begging you.
Now, I'll give you a tip when you're boarding up windows. Start at the bottom first. You know, don't bother with the top. Nobody's coming in the top of a tall ass window. There's not a single walker that's going to claw their way up to the you know, 18 inch gap at the 6 feet up on the wall.
I don't know. What if there's an NBA Hall of Fame game and like you got zombie and they played at the Philadelphia, the seven, and then you got zombie fucking Patrick Ewing and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Well, for every Abdul-Jabbar, you've got an Iverson,
7 foot zombies,
Muggsy Bogues. You got those guys too. So
that's true. That's true. But those guys can just like literally step over your walls, just reach into your second floor story for all your children. You're done. You're done.
Fair. Okay. Here's my other worry, or maybe this wasn't the best scene. Virgil spent all of an afternoon with Michonne, and now he's talking like he knew her for years and knew the intricacies of her personality, exactly how Judith is like her, exactly how they're different. He spent, I think it was literally maybe a day with Michonne. That seems like not enough time.
They did trip apple balls together, so maybe it's like they spent 1,000 years in an endless cycle of understanding.
Yeah.
No, it's one of those things like, I think we talked about this, that like, even though a lot of these bonus episodes and even late season 10 episodes kind of by consensus sucked, like when you get to scenes like this, you won't remember like how hackneyed and how short. You'll just remember the bare facts of the situation, that like Michonne and him had an understanding. Michonne saved him. Something about Michonne just like really deeply impressed this guy, and now he sees it in her daughter. And I think it works at that level, but you're absolutely right. This guy, I guess even then you could read it as like a guy who's trying to turn a new leaf and he's trying to tell a girl what she'd probably want to hear to get through her day. Like, he doesn't know his mom that well, and certainly the circumstances under which he knew her mother is kind of horrifying, and the show hasn't really grappled with, but
Virgil's weird, man. Virgil is in this, like, I don't know if it's because he's in a bad physical state or what, but he is like half-assing wanting to try this group. Try to help this group. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh yeah, I can go out and I can help with the windmill. And they say, you know, maybe you should stay back. He's like, yeah, I'll stay back. Definitely. Awesome. Cool.
I mean, he did get fucked up by those monkey men.
Yeah, he got stabbed a lot. That's true.
Deep stabs into the core of your body with like monkey men's knives. These are not like some knife collect, like, you know, guys, not like, this isn't a mall ninja that's like taking care of their blades. Like, this is some rusty knife tetanus shit. He got stabbed. So like, I think the fact that he staggers to his feet and like, I'll go out there, is kind of like borderline heroic, but
yeah,
it all fucked up.
Absurd. Like, oh yeah, Mr. Stab Wound is gonna help us out. Sure.
It is a little Grandpa Joe, right?
Yeah.
You know, let me get out of, my gout. Oh
exactly,
God.
Unless
I have a golden ticket, I couldn't possibly help at the windmill. You know, yeah, I get it.
Right. That's how I was feeling. But you're right. He was stabbed a lot. So maybe I should cut him some slack. I think that's about it for that scene.
I just love the cut to the front door being held shut by a propped up kitchen chair. like that. It's like, not only do we have shit wood, not only are the hinges failing, but we also
that works, man. You hammer a board into a 2x4 into the floor, like, near the legs. That'll work for a
while.
That's
not even a good security if you're trying to like smoke weed in your bedroom. You don't want your parents to barge in on you, like, let alone like a zombie horde. It was just funny. It's just funny. There's a lot of funny physical acting going on, like people bodily holding doors and just flopping up, and that it's a lot of Star Trek, you know, taking photon torpedo hits on the bridge acting kind of in this stuff
for sure. Go back to Meridian. The minefields are holding off the walkers. Leah's thinking about the people they've lost, and Pope quotes the Bible Ladder about war and sacrifice and how their sacrifice is what will help them prevail. And then Daryl spots Maggie and Gabriel in the crowd of walkers, and they all go around to the side of the wall. And Daryl's on the inside, and he kills one of the Reapers, the guy that he's been sharing cigarettes with, tosses his body down and tells Maggie and Gabriel to go around, and then breaks the pantry open for them.
The old Sig and Stab. Oldest trick in the book. Did you notice, just after we praised them of understanding binocular vision, they're back on their binocular bullshit this episode.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, Dara's looking through the two half circles. Maybe it was Gabriel looking through the binoculars and he's only got the one good eye. So they weren't being accurate, they were just being super stupid. Now Daryl's got
the
two eyes.
Absolutely,
and sure enough,
right. You are absolutely right.
Oh my
right.
God. I don't know if that's more or less impressive, because I think they're just showing eye continuity through the stupid
binocular continuity.
Yeah.
Because isn't. His is a monocular, right?
Yeah. He's got the Cyclops vision.
Oh, you're totally right about that. That's incredible. Good job. Good job, crew.
Yeah. Again, I thought the discipline of Maggie, and it turns out Gabriel, like, just advancing in front of this like onslaught of mines and stuff, like, that's got to be terrifying. I thought that stuff, this part of the battle really was working for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I was happy to see that they had a plan here. Or at least it seemed like it. I don't know. I guess I wasn't exactly sure what their plan was when they rolled up, but later we get to see their plan.
Yeah, I would, you know, I think this would have, I think if I was writing the show, blocking the show, I would have, like, the last episode when Maggie, when Negan is talking about we need a plan, she's like, well, we got Daryl on the inside, so maybe we just need to get close. And then Negan could have been like, well, how are we going to get close? We're going to get, you know, and he can go, but like, it felt a little ad hoc, like Maggie is just relying on, Daryl to make magic happen, because I don't know how the hell she, you know, evades that patrol, much less finds the hidey hole through the garbage chute.
Yeah, that was insane to me when they unleashed the every community has a tunnel leading inside of it that's accessible from the outside.
This
happened in Alexandria too, right? That's how Beta got in.
It also happened. Well, they dug that tunnel, but it also happened at Hilltop. Right. They just had the false, you know, stack of wood.
It was Hilltop.
The teenagers knew how to get out of. Yeah.
Right. So every community seemingly has one. I would be looking around in Alexandria for Reg's hidey hole that he used to like get outside and smoke cigarettes while Deanna wasn't looking or whatever.
Yeah.
Do his shitty teen stuff.
But it did feel like it felt like Maggie just kind of, and I don't know, I guess I would have appreciated them addressing that, the fact that like they are relying a lot on Daryl. And I guess maybe that was the point of like him, you know, going back to some of the stuff we talked about the last few weeks. It's like, you know, why did he want to go out and get close to Maggie just so she knew that she had a dude on the inside?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think Maggie in a million years thinks that Daryl truly turns against them.
No.
So.
No. All right, let's take another quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, as a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, we're outside of Meridian, where Negan and Casey Jones take some shrapnel from a landmine, which affects... I thought it was going to affect their ability to hurt. It didn't. It actually did. They stuck with it.
Just make Casey Jones do the equivalent of going, like he skinned his knee, you know. Just had to suck wind for a little bit. Took a light landmine to the leg.
Light shrapneling. No big deal.
Just a little bit of blazing hot fragments of metal tearing through your flesh. It's fine.
Who hasn't been there?
Who hasn't?
All right, Daryl returns to the Reapers, and Pope tells Leah to ready the Huacha. And Daryl says, "What you talking about?" And they claim it can end this.
I also thought Daryl was on the ball. Like, he knew that his absence would be missed, so he has his crossbow ready to go, and, you know, they're not telling him shit, so he's like, I was just preparing for the worst. She's like, we already got the worst. Made Daryl look resourceful, I thought.
He could have come up just like scratching his ass and said, I was taking a shit.
Right.
Like, just preparing for the worst.
Yeah. Had to take a last ditch gate shit, you know. Gate's going to be overrun. This ain't my first gate rodeo.
What, you all didn't take gate shits?
Well, I had to fight a tank once. I had to hold my shit for 10 hours. Never again, I said. Never again.
When I heard the term Huacha, I was wondering what the hell is that, and I was very excited for the concept to see what it was.
So there's no way that the Walking Dead crew hasn't watched Kingdom on Netflix and seen I believe they deployed the Huacha against the zombie hordes either at the climax of season one or like in the beginning of season two.
In that kind of narrow strip of land across the water, right?
There's no fucking way that they didn't watch this zombie thing and decide, we're going to, you know, because it is a, you know, you got a combat engineer. He's got a bunch of metal and he's got a bunch of black powder and you've already made all the landmines. I don't know that he makes this thing. Like, is this the most efficient, like a 15th century Korean field artillery piece? Is it better than what he could come up with just like a big bomb or, you know, improvised grenades or things like that? You know, it just. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, we can talk about the efficacy. I definitely was wondering when it started firing off because I thought it was going to be more like a kind of massive automatic crossbow sort of thing. I thought it was going to shoot because it looks like there's kind of like, I guess what they are is essentially pointy fireworks, right?
Yep.
Is that?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, okay, if I were trying to kill someone with a pointy bottle rocket, could I do it? I'm not sure I could do it if they were more than like 20 feet away. Because these things aren't going to fly super straight. They're going everywhere.
I did read up about the real life historical usage, and I guess this was used to great effect repelling some of the Japanese army back in the medieval periods of these cultures. And this was kind of a perfected design that the Chinese came up with like a century before. But I guess like it's well attested. This worked pretty fucking good, especially in defensive roles.
Does it actually kill a ton of the enemy or does it intimidate the enemy and kill some of them?
Usually they would have like several of these carts and they would set up like overlapping fields of fire and they would you'd have a, and also you could cock them at 45 degrees and you could shoot these things from like 1,000 yards away. So like think of a mass cavalry charge and you just throw a thousand steel arrows into the mix, you know, the all come from like four times archery range. I think it would work pretty well, but like against zombies, I don't know because they're, you know, there's only one part in their body you can hit to kind of incapacitate them. So,
right.
And having only one, I just feel like this is just an homage to the Kingdom and kind of like a fancy like thing for the fans to ooh and ah over in the finale more than it is a serious, like, you know, what they would come up with in universe. But I don't know. It could also come straight from the comic book. This could be Kirkman's fault.
Could be. I know that this is going to be kind of a one and done thing, right? There's no way you get more. You can't reload this thing mid battle, I wouldn't think.
Unless you had
a siege situation where.
Now maybe like I could buy this. What if they have multiple boxes? So like they just like, you know, just remove the whole box from the top of it and then load another box on. Like maybe they could do several volleys.
Maybe.
But it would take like I would think it would take a while to get that, like, you know, a couple minutes to get that reset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. They showed the guy individually hand loading the rockets in the final stage. So like, maybe not. Maybe it's just this is the load. They're blowing it.
Who knows? All right, Maggie and Gabriel get into Meridian via a tunnel under the wall. Maggie checks that Gabriel remembers the plan and then tells him to wait for her signal and they move off.
She says, we get the food and go home. And I have my notes. How are they going to, quote unquote, get the food with two people?
It's like I shop at Kroger. It's one of those bag things.
Yeah, it's going to be like hurricane looters. You just have like a couple of, I don't think it's going to get it done. I don't think a couple of plastic bags full of stuff is going to get you done.
IKEA, those big IKEA blue bags that you can
get. A couple of those, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? Like, and I thought a couple times in the episode they were attempting to explain because like, okay, well, this is Maggie's old base. She probably knows that there's an old car that's like, yeah, but they never really let us in on what Maggie's plan for taking the places and once taking how she gets the shit out, you know, in quantity, in bulk.
Right.
Because a backpack, three backpacks full is not going to make a dent.
No. Six horses didn't make a dent. Have they eaten all those horses yet? So,
Yeah,
you're going to need, apparently you need thousands of pounds of food for the people in Alexandria for even a short amount of time. So,
mm-hmm.
Then we go back to Alexandria, where the walkers are forcing their way into Aaron's house, and Rosita has them open the door so she can run outside and fight them. And the others watch her from inside, and she returns victorious and tells the others to stay away from the windows.
Yeah, this was cool. Her kicking ass with the spiked cricket bat was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I'm not going to quibble about like minor problems I have with it. I thought this was pretty cool. And the way she walks back in is very mm-hmm. cool, too. There was something like
her telling Gracie, maybe let's stay away from the window, like mildly. It was pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think what I've seen things like this before, but I can't remember what they were in. But I really felt it. Like, she walks back in. She's the hero of the day. She's soaking wet, right? She does the heroic, like, walking back in drenched. Yeah. It's very cool. It was almost like a Kill Bill kind of moment.
It reminded me a lot of, like, Aragorn and Gimli going out the front gate of Helm's Deep just to buy the men time to, like, barricade the door. And they're just kind of, like, you know, spinning around, cutting, you know, killing. It's kind of like, yeah, when that, like, you got to go out and push the enemy back. You can't, you got to go sally forth.
Yeah.
And it's in the King, from the King Cave. I feel like this scene exists because Christian Serratos has worked really hard on her physical fitness and combat training, and she has very rarely gotten a chance to shine. So, like, fuck it, you know, just let her go out there, kick ass for 60 seconds. It'll be great. And she looks good doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. So back at Meridian, Gabriel enters a building and digs around in a secret compartment. That's kind of it for that scene. And then
big ass machete sword. Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was going to run into the priest. I'm like, oh, he's going to find in the bowels of the priest is going to be like kneeling in front of a graven image. And he's going to get up and like, the God told me you were coming, and it's going to be some cool. But no, they didn't really do anything with the holy man standoff like I thought they would.
They still could. Maybe
they still could. We do have Huacha
part two.
What? Yeah. Huacha. What is this? Four blood part two. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. So speaking of the Huacha, they reveal the Huacha. It's a lot of arrows fired all at once, essentially. And Daryl asks Leah if she believes what Pope says about God choosing him. She says, it doesn't really matter, but it matters to Daryl. The subject turns to their past relationship, but then Pope interrupts him on the radio to find out the status of the Huacha. It's ready. So, you know, they want to fire that thing up. Daryl chooses this moment to tell Leah the truth about what he's up to, about his people trying to steal back the food and the walking with the dead outside. And he says she can come with him if she lets him stop Pope. And then Pope walks up and things get awkward. But Leah does cover for Daryl, which.
Yeah. And like I said, I think this is pretty well handled. Like, mm-hmm. Daryl is trying to run this out, and he's completely out of runway, and his only choices are to essentially kill Leah and then join, you know, or try to level with her and be like, hey, I've lied to you, it's because of my family. You know, you could tell he had all the lines of argument, and I feel like it's probably the best hand he could have played given where everything's at.
Yeah. The Huacha has advanced his timeline, right? He's out of time because this is a devastating weapon that they're about to unleash on his friends who are walking.
Someone should die. Someone should die as a result of it. So that's bad from Daryl's point of view, obviously.
Yeah. So he's got to do what he can, and leveling with her seems like the only option here.
And they've also shown that she's willing to fudge and defy Pope to save like good people / innocent / families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the only naive thing is like, hey, you know, I got these good people, and we're going to have to take all your food. Like, it's an untenable situation. And I think, I don't know if he miscalculated, because again, it's the only card he had to play, but I think he might have miscalculated how truly Leah feels, even though he sees, like, you know, from his perspective, these are awful people. They're her brothers and sisters and father, you know?
Yeah. I think the episode played this right. Would have been the entire time I was thinking, well, exactly that. This is her family, Daryl. You're talking about family. You're talking about what matters to you. Think about what matters to her. These are her people. And if the episode had leaned farther into the conversion to Daryl's POV here, I would have been disappointed because Leah wouldn't have been thinking about the things that I was thinking about for her, you know?
Yeah.
So the episode played it really like they walk a couple of lines here that are really hard to walk. And I feel like they came out the other end smelling pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And now we got a war on our hands. So that'll be fun. Maggie hotwires a truck. One of the Reapers is nearby when she starts it up and spots her. And then Maggie sends the truck through the front gate, leaving Meridian wide open for the walkers. And Pope tells his watcher guy to shoot it at the courtyard, even though their guys are still out there, which, you know, Daryl's out of time now. So he pulls his knives. And because Pope is a maniac and doesn't care about family, Leah backs Daryl's play and kills. Well, doesn't kill Pope yet. She deals a death blow, but he's still alive.
He's still alive.
She stabs him in the neck and he's bleeding out and crawling around on the ground.
Mr. Hawacha gets taken out too.
Yes. By Daryl.
I wonder
with a throwing knife.
With the throw, and I wonder if had Daryl found a way to not kill that guy, if things had gone a bit different.
Maybe.
But that death, like it's definitely visually, because when, you know, Daryl's beckoning her to come, she like her point of view shuts and looks down at her fallen comrade. And you can tell that's where, like, you know, the rush of killing Pope and being free of that smacks right into the oh, my God. And also, like, unfortunately, there's tons of Reapers dying in the courtyard, too.
Yeah.
Maggie, you know, the zombies and Maggie's team are just like cutting them the ribbons down there. So. It's too bad. Too bad. The calculus didn't work out for you, Daryl.
You know, who should have done a little bit more math is the guy who lit the Hawacha, or I guess the guy who set up the Hawacha, because they've got a fucking 50-foot fuse on this thing, man.
They have a lot of cannon fuse.
They could have lit this from outside the walls. It was crazy.
Yeah, like the guy lights it 60 seconds later, Pope's back. Okay, where's this watch at? Still burning, boss. Still burning. Can you blow on the fuse? Like, yeah. Getting some Looney Tunes shit here.
And Daryl cuts the fuse and there's still another 5 feet of the thing. It's crazy.
I know. That was hilarious.
It's like coiled up. It's like on a spool.
Yeah. Some combat engineer. Well, I mean, this is the guy. He has 1,000 pounds of black powder and this is what he comes up with, you know?
Yeah. Plus, he had just an entire spool of fuse and only one Hawacha. So he's 1,000 like,
feet.
Fuck it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, so might as well, right?
Right.
Some men just like to watch this, just like to watch the fuse burn. Crazy Joker types.
Maggie fights a Reaper and gets her ass kicked, but Gabriel saves her by sniping the Reaper from the window. And then Leah ends Pope. She kills him, puts a knife in the base of his skull. Daryl tries to take her out of there, but she radios to the others that Daryl murdered Pope and he's with the enemy. She tells Daryl the Pope forgot what matters, family. And she'd do anything to protect her family. So Daryl runs off.
She sucks on a Corona.
Yeah, Leah becomes a new leader, telling Carver to close the gates so they can kill everything inside the walls.
Yeah. I thought Gabriel looked pretty good sniping. I thought that was pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, again, it's annoying that there's clearly a plan. And we were not, this is like two finales in a row where there's this big heroic plan that we only know like the barest bits if we know anything about it at all. And it must be real fun as a writer to just make shit up. Like, you know, you don't have to have any like smart counter move. You can just be like, oh yeah, Maggie's about to die. Well, Gabriel has an Overwatch position. He's just going to start taking people out. Where's he at? I don't fucking know. How'd he get there? But they had a plan. They're sticking to it.
Did you notice when they showed the view in the scope, it had two circles?
No. They're just wilding out with the optics on this show.
No, I'm kidding.
But like, you know what I mean? Like it's in like, you know, Maggie hotwiring that vehicle and I'm like, oh, this is smart. She's going to like, you know, her and Gabe are going to load this thing up and drive for the gates, but she just crashes it into the gates. So... Mm-hmm. Again, where I guess was their plan really to kill everyone inside here and then take the food at their leisure? Like, but that's at odds with her. Like, we're going to do this thing. We're get the food. We're going to get out. Like they're going to have to beat a retreat under fire again. Yeah. I don't know. Can't judge because I don't know what the fuck the plan is.
Was she not sure that the truck would actually withstand the collision with the gate? So like she didn't want to put all the food into a dead truck.
put all your eggs in one rusted pickup. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they say, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. The plan was a little confusing and a little haphazard, but we got to the end of this.
It is
episode.
Interesting because they also play Carver being really angry, and it's going to be interesting to see like what repercussions Leah faces because of that.
Yeah.
Because obviously she has been stumping for Daryl this whole time. Daryl has gone rogue, even if you accept her version of the events. And like, there's got to be a lot of anger, but she's like just naturally stepping into the leadership role. But,
right. That was the thing that I really noticed here is like Carver asks her what they do now, mm-hmm. and she has mm-hmm. a plan. She just stepped right into this. I feel like there will be some questions. There will be some like anger from some of the people if Carver survives. But I think ultimately, if there is even two Reapers left at the end of this, Leah will be the leader of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I think they're all going to be wiped out within an episode or two. So like a lot of this is just who cares?
Yep. So the walkers once again press in on Aaron's house. I don't know how this is happening. There's a fire outside that they're attracted to, but somehow, where's Gracie? Where's her shoulders? Are they close to the windows?
Down in the basement this time.
God, the basement has windows though. Was she jumping up and down near the basement windows?
She is. She's these delicious children brains are just being paraded in front of the zombies. That's the only thing they like more than a burning windmill is a delicious child brain.
They are sweeter.
So fragrant.
Sure.
So sweet. Yeah. They're like softer, more malleable, less wrinkly. It's just really sink your teeth into that. And then they want it so much.
Rosita orders everyone upstairs. So Gracie's fucking around in the basement where Judith finds her. The whole basement's flooding. She apparently wanted a weapon, so Judith makes her one. They run upstairs. They find a bunch of walkers taking over the first floor. They've ceded the first floor to the walkers. And so they can't make it up the stairs. So they instead turn back and lock themselves in the basement, which I mentioned is flooding, right? I don't see this as a huge problem. Like, these are children. These are not grown-ass adults who won't fit through a basement window. These are children. Wait for the water to get high, and unless Gracie can't swim, you just go right out the window, right?
Yeah. I thought they're going to, obviously, they're looking back and forth between the door and the windows. They're going to crawl out the windows. But then they're out in the middle of the fucking storm. So
yes,
like,
I mean, that's a problem. There are walkers out
and
there.
I was a little annoyed at Gracie wearing the dumb hat, but it kind of works that like, okay, Judith got her a backbone and gave her a sword and made her feel cool for a moment. And she, you know, there's an all out ditch. Her daddy is out there fighting the walkers. They set the seed of, I can't ask anyone to do something that I wouldn't do for myself. She can't ask Judith to protect her if she's, so like I get it, and kids do stupid shit like this. I don't know why no one's watching Gracie. This is the Carl Jr.
Judith
problem.
Was You've supposed got, to, yeah.
Yeah, you got tons of like babysitters and watchers and stuff, and she gets, but like I guess it all it's medium annoying.
I thought it was fine. Aside from, you know, I don't know why the walkers are attacking this house in the first place.
All the banging. For, you know, they should have just, you know, left Aaron's furniture alone.
I guess so.
They'd have been fine.
Just be quiet. Just sit upstairs and hold your breath or something. I don't know.
You think Gracie's going to get her first zombie kill next episode, though? I feel like that's where they're heading.
Ooh. Maybe. She might. I mean, she has a weapon now. Yeah. What was the weapon? It was just a broken off broom handle or something?
A broken broomstick handle, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I would like to see, it'd be cool. I think it'd be, there's only like two seasons left of the show, but like, it'd be kind of cool to have like a Bloodhound Gang style, you know, Teen Titans version of The Walking Dead, where you've got, you know, Gracie and RJ and Judith and maybe one of the reformed shitty teens, and they go, like that's another spinoff you can do.
She might get her first kill. I think what's more likely is she's going to have her arm ripped off.
Match your dad. Oh my god. Yeah. Oh my god, the curse of Rick Grimes. Yeah,
just lose an arm, and then the Teen Titans thing will work even better, because you need an analog for each of the,
true, you need a cyborg, yeah,
the adults, right? Like, you've got Judith, who's essentially Michonne and Rick. You need Gracie to be Aaron, so
the preteen Alexandrian Titans coming soon to AMC Plus.
You can have the shitty teen who's always like the butt of the jokes, and
yeah, Well, they're like Skull and what Blob from Power Rangers.
Sure.
Yeah. I forget what their exact names were. But yeah, you got to have
Skull and Bulk. Yeah.
You got to have the teenage antagonists, and we've got those in spades in this fucking town.
Hell yeah. All right, last scene, Maggie, Negan, Daryl fight the Reapers and the Walkers. Leah calls her guys back and they see why pretty quickly as the Huacha begins to fire. And then it fires right into the camera, destroys the camera. AMC too cheap to replace the camera, so they just end the episode there. They'll come back with next season's budget for new cameras.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was funny, like Maggie looking up and you know, Leah mean mugging everybody, both of them wondering why the fuck we're not wearing the masks that we should probably be wearing in these situations, you know, because Maggie's maybe wanting to walk with the dead again. And
yeah,
I don't know why the Reapers ever stopped wearing their masks. Like, what the fuck? So mask optional party.
Yeah. Yeah, you got two groups, both of which are known for their iconic masks. Neither of them wearing them. Perfect. Perfect. Walking yeah. Dead.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
That's it for the episode. We will have a feedback episode to kind of wrap things up. We're not going to have a post-season wrap-up finale or anything. We're going to let the feedback episode that we're recording this Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/baldmove. We'll have the podcast version of that out later that night. But if you got anything you want to say about season 11A, get it into watchingdead@baldmove.com. Once again, watchingdead@baldmove.com.
Is that Huacha Dead?
Yeah.
Huacha Dead at baldmove.com.
Huacha, can we next year change a logo to Watching Dead?
Yes, I love it.
And just like Photoshop one of those fucking things over the front and in color, of course, because it's
still alive.
It's still alive. It'll be black and white the next episode because I'm sure there's only going to be one Huacha.
Right.
Unless we have Huacha 3 for Blood Part 2-3, I don't know, maybe, maybe.
Where the Huacha gets extraordinary, superhumanly ripped, so yes. Where you can see its veins, yeah.
Does some steroid cycles and comes back bigger and stronger, veinier, yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's our plans to close out our coverage of The Watching Dead. Look forward to it coming back in late winter. I'm assuming it's going to be coming back February, kind of like it always does, maybe March at the latest. There's going to be just a scad of great television coming out at that same time.
Yeah.
But that's when we're going to shamble back up with them. Again, one final opportunity to get your feedback in, watchingdead@baldmove.com. We'll record that episode 1 p.m. on Wednesday, Eastern time, and then the podcast will be out. And then I'll be it for The Watching Dead for a while. So... if you do not see us on the feedback show, thank you for being along this final episode. This is the most episode. This is the most seasons of television we ever covered for a single show.
It is
historic. As we put this thing to bed. But yeah, hope to see you next season and on the feedback episode one more time. watchingdead@baldmove.com. If you are parting ways with us, there's a ton of great stuff coming out this winter. We're currently doing Foundation on Apple TV Plus. We're looking forward to Expanse coming back, which we think is going to be around Christmas time. Another great science fiction series. The Boys will be doing covering of that in 2022. We've got plans to come back for the House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Probably be looking at the Lord of the Rings things coming out from it. Just tons and tons of stuff.
Oh,
if you like what we do.
Boba Fett.
Book of Boba
coming late this year, December 29th.
And if you like our pulp coverage, the stuff, the zombies, the space stuff, the ray guns, the ghosts and goblins, is a great way to follow along with all of us is find our podcast Pulp, Bald Move Pulp, because all of our pulp movie and television coverage kind of gets rounded up to there. So you can follow that and keep the good times going all year round. Anyway, I think that's enough. We'll see you back on the feedback episode. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.